Hey everyone, welcome to The Next Level, a podcast from the Team Performance Institute. Here we provide actionable insights on modern leadership and team development, driving higher levels of organizational performance and life empowerment. I'm your host, John Sanchez. Join me and my team as we take you on the journey to the next level. All right, everybody, welcome to the next level. I've been super fired up about our guest today. Easy to call this guy a best friend. Great guy, maybe even like golf instructor.
Certain aspects. Swinging really hard.
Yeah, club speed wise, I think you got the world beat. Everybody, this is we get to be with Todd Hudson today on the Next Level podcast. And just a brief intro on Todd. I'm going to go a little bit deeper into this. Met Todd, geez, maybe what, like 13 years ago, 11, 12 years ago? You're just starting your restaurant. Todd's an executive chef. My wife, Anya, loves to call him a sexy food god, which I'm not really sure how to take that. But he is probably one of the, if not the most talented chef that I've met and experienced like cuisine like this. He owns and started his own restaurant here in Cincinnati, Ohio. It's actually in Mason, Ohio, which is a fantastic story. And he's done it all relatively early in life. What I really want to dig in with Todd today is like his passion, not only about his restaurant, his food, but, you know, just towards life. So, Todd, welcome.
Thank you.
Let's start with your restaurant, because that's where it started for me. Like, I'll never forget, first time I walked up, bellied up to the bar. There was another couple there. It was Trevor and Tiffany Hellig. Never met them before. And I'm there. I don't think you had any room that night. So we got to sit at the bar, and we ordered the mushroom fonduta. And our first bite, Anya goes, oh my God, this is got to be the best thing I've ever tasted. I don't know if we met you that night, but that's where it started for me. I'd love to start with you. Tell me a little bit about like your vision for that restaurant when you were younger. How did this all come about?
So my grandmother was from Ireland, and she was certainly like, you know, I often describe her as my Jesus, and just the most amazing woman I've ever met. She was such a kind person, and I mean, just totally a great human. And her passion was cooking and feeding people and so forth. And you know, I think she was coming from Ireland, and you know, it was a harder life in Ireland. And then when she ended up here in America, which was, you know, her and my grandfather met during World War II. When he was serving over there, and then they ended up moving back home to here. And you know, she radiated gratitude, mm-hmm. of, you know, being safe and secure and having money and food on the table and a garden and all those things. And she loved to share that with people. And she really appreciated human connection. So, you know, growing up, I spent a lot of time with my grandmother, and my dad pretty much took care of his parents there. And there was a long time there where I was probably there almost every day. But you know, her main shtick was she fed people. My grandfather, so grandma had one daughter and then three boys. All of them are, you know, 6'2", 6'3", 6'5". And her husband was 6'6". Large men. And, you know, so they ate a lot, you know. So grandma had this massive garden that she shared with her neighbor, George Robinson, who's still alive at 95 or so. And wow, awesome dude. And they were neighbors for 50 years. We're really close with that family. But, you know, they shared this huge garden. And, you know, I grew up going to grandma's house, and it was always a meal. You know, grandma always had food on the table. And if she didn't, it was coming shortly. Mm-hmm. And if you were hungry or not, it didn't matter. Food was coming. And, you know, the cool thing was, you know, being over there, and she had this, you know, couple acres, and you could go out back and we could shoot bow and arrows. There was some woods, there was a creek, you know, all kinds of cool stuff. But you would go down when it was time to eat, you'd go down to the garden and pick, you know, and you pick green beans, and we had grapes and lots of blackberries and apples and of course tons of tomatoes and so forth. And then she would bring that in, and she might throw, you know, maybe a half a chicken in there. and then all these veggies and things, and then she would make soda bread or cornbread or something, and you know, and she could feed 20 people to drop a dime, you know,
literally from her garden.
Yeah, for yeah. almost no money, you know. Yeah. And I as I got older, you know, and there's all these pictures of me when I was little that my grandma was cooking in the kitchen, and there's all these people sitting at the table, mostly very large men. And then my, you know, me as an infant, and my yeah. grandma's holding me and she's stirring the pot. So, you know, I think that's where I got, like, you know, that's where I got the connection with food and yeah. with people. And, but I think she actually did it. She did the food because she was facilitating conversations, and she didn't want people to leave her house. You know, if you showed up and you wanted to be in and out, it was not going to happen. Mm-hmm. She was going to make you sit down at the table and find out who you are. And, you know, she wanted to know everything about you and let you know that, you know, if you ever need anything, that she'd like to help, and if you need a place to stay, she'd help you out. Da 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 da. If you needed a ride somewhere, like, she was just absolute Jesus-like character.
Yeah. You know, and genuinely commune.
Yeah.
Right. In the full definition of that word, like, really commune, like, with food as a catalyst to life, like, getting to know you.
Yeah. And I really believe I lived with her when I got older to help take care of her. And, you know, I truly believe that she felt so much gratitude for America that, like, I had never experienced that, because, you know, I was lucky to be born here, and, you know, I brought up in this world of, you know, a great middle class, you know, suburban. I described my childhood as, it's like it was a TV show. It was like it was a sitcom, you know, just everything went really well. We had such a tight family and lots of friends, and my dad was well known and all that. But I think a lot of that goes back to the level of appreciation that my grandma had for the United States, because we were free and that we were taken care of and all these things. And she was just so happy. Yeah. You know, she lived in a one bedroom house that had a wood burning stove. They renovated the garage. And at one point when my dad was in high school, they had 11 people living there.
Wow.
So her house, I mean, it was almost kind of comical that it had, she probably had 3 or 4 dining tables packed with chairs, and she had stools, you know, like roller stools in the closets and whatnot to pull out, and, you know, 4 couches in one room. And, you know, it was just, she didn't see the need for open space on a floor.
Yeah.
She thought, well, we can put a couch there, that way we can seat more people. You know, and there might be 40 people there for Thanksgiving, you know, in and out throughout the day, and in this little one bedroom house, you know. And she was just so appreciative to have all of these people. And, you know, she really got hip to, oddly enough, the culture of Kentucky.
Yeah.
And I think that was.
So where was this house? Where was it?
This is in Fairfield.
Fairfield. Okay.
Yeah.
And here's Cincinnati, right?
Used to be at the very end of a right off the highway, oddly enough.
Yeah.
And you know, and I really, there was a Meijer grocery store, like, a mile from her house. I mean, you could walk there if you needed to.
Yeah.
Even that, I think she thought that was the coolest thing in the world, that she did not. Well, one time I asked her, I said, I actually took her to this Irish pub, you know, that had just opened. I took her there for her birthday or something. And I said, Grandma, she said, why did we come here? I said, well, this is an Irish pub. And she said, no, it's not. Well, yeah, Grandma, they brought everything in from Ireland and da 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 da. Yeah. She said, no, if it was an Irish pub, everyone sitting at that bar would be talking to each other.
Yeah.
And then, you know, so I asked her, and I think we had corned beef and cabbage and whatever. I said, did you eat Reubens and corned beef and cabbage? And she said, I never saw corned beef and cabbage until I came to America.
Oh, really?
I said, well, what did you eat growing up? And she said, we ate what we grew strictly. You know, if you didn't grow it, it was 2.5 hour ride on a horse to go get more food. And if your neighbors didn't grow it, you didn't grow it, we didn't eat it.
Yeah.
Which I think ended up being a lot of cabbage and potatoes and things like that. But meat was really a luxury.
Yeah.
You know, so I think for her, she just felt, you know, and I think it was the security that, you know, that my grandpa provided for her.
Yeah.
And you know, the accessibility of everything and then the safety and the freedom for her to be able to go down the hill and get a dozen eggs and a gallon of milk. Mm-hmm. She just thought that was the coolest thing in the world.
Yeah.
You know, and she maintained that appreciation, you know, throughout her entire life. And just, she vibrated that, you know, like you'd feel how happy she was. And she all the time, you know, telling me, which was always awkward, that, you know, I'm her grandson. And she would say, "You guys are the best people in the world." Mm. And I'm like, "You do know I'm your son's son."
Yeah.
Like, you were actually the creator of that.
Mm-hmm.
But she saw me as an American. She saw herself as an Irish woman.
Mm.
You know, so that was really cool, you know, and that really, it's a good perspective for me to have, you know, and I was 20,
yeah,
21. It was a good thing for me to have that perspective of, you know, what does someone else without the luxury of being born in America, how do they view us?
Yeah.
You know, we don't think of Ireland as like a third world country.
No.
You know, but I think she was just so proud of her husband and her family and this country. And she was just, and you could see it, you know, and I think that was like to her, like the apex of all that was the ability to have a safe home that you can seat a ton of people in, and you can feed them and you can grow food and no one's going to bother you. And you can go to the grocery store when you need to. And there were jobs and there was money and, you know, all of these things that she just,
you just described the wildflower to me, like this awesome place where you can go to, there's all these, there's great community around it. It's the whole thing. So much I want to dive into. I love the idea of the gratitude of an immigrant, right? You know, my background, my father was an immigrant. He came across here at a young age and still has that same fascinating, you know, that sense of like deep gratitude just for the day, you know, just to get up. And I love the way he processes certain things too. Like to him, you know, he came over in the 60s. By the 80s, he actually had worked hard enough to gain a little bit of, you know, a couple of nickels to rub together. And so he's able to afford carpet. Like, carpet's a big deal. Like, in a third world country like the Philippines, like, carpet's a big deal. And so, like, that's his idea of, like, I mean, he's so gratitude to get up and, like, in the morning, his bedroom is carpeted and put his feet down on carpet. That's still a big deal.
Yeah.
For him and for those who, you know, get a generation or two behind that.
So do you think that they, immigrants like your father, my grandmother, do you feel that they have like they feel a bit of responsibility when they come here and they've got these things and they have this level of gratitude that they have somewhat of a responsibility to show that and to maintain, you know, some level of respect from their community because they've been offered these things, you know?
Yeah. I think so. I think more than that, I think it starts there, like whatever country that you came from, to understand, like, to get here is a voyage. To get here is a huge deal to make that choice. I mean, I think about my dad in his 20s to be like, I'm leaving everything I know. He was one of 10 children, like everything I know, this entire community who kind of worshiped him because he was smart enough to get into like medical school over there. So he's leaving. He kind of was like, you know, in his small world at that point in his 20s, they just really respected him for what he was able to accomplish so far in his life. And then just to leave it all and to come here. But I think when they come here, not only do they have like big eyes in terms of, like, wow, this is a land of opportunity. And this does go back to, you know, when your grandma came across, my dad came across in the 60s. I still believe America is a huge land of opportunity. I still believe that if you work really hard, you can make things happen. You can really do well. You know, if you persevere and you dig in and you lead with, you know, integrity and you do the right thing, you have big obstacles, but you can make it happen. But I believe that what was embedded there when they come here, they know that if I work really hard and they see things a little differently, you know, like, oh, like the water's not running, you know, like if the water wasn't running in my bathroom this morning, I probably would have been like, what is happening? Like, this is all messed up. That's an everyday thing for my dad in the Philippines. They turn the water on and off to this day in that neighborhood, whether like you don't know if the water's going to run that day or it's not. So to see it from that perspective, it's like, well, lights are on and water's running. Hell yeah. Let's go. This is going to be a good day. I can make a cup of coffee today. You know, otherwise, let's just get out there and go make it happen. Right.
Crazy, man.
I'm gonna go back to, you know, I want to go back to the restaurant a little bit. And guys, for those of you watching, this is probably one of hopefully like 20 podcasts that Todd and I will do. If you just sit around, we do talk a lot. We are good friends. We've been friends for a long time, traveled together. Our families are growing up together. So we're very blessed to have each other in our lives. But I'd like to focus this very first podcast around your restaurant, your passion. At what point in your life were you like, yeah, I'm going to do this. I'm going to open up my own restaurant, or, you know, this is what I want to do with my life. How did you make that decision?
So my dad was a member at this, you know, country club. And, you know, I was on the swim team and playing tennis and so forth. And I mean, that was pretty much like daycare for us, was to go get dropped off at the pool. There would be, you know, one mom. Really actually crazy too, is my parents bought this house in this neighborhood that had just been built, which was a Homorama neighborhood at the time, back before Homorama was bougie.
Yeah.
And bought this $50,000 house, you know, which is probably a lot.
It's a big deal.
And what happened was, man, it was like that, you know, all of these people that moved in this neighborhood were the same age. Mm. They all had kids about the same age.
Fun.
So all of a sudden there's like, you know, 40 kids in this neighborhood.
Yeah.
And all the families joined this country club, and all the dads would golf together, and the kids were on the swim team together, and so forth. So
sounds like paradise.
There would be this like caravan.
Yeah.
You know, that someone would come around and pick up all the kids or whatever, yeah. Or you knew that you could take your kids to the pool in the summertime. You know, my mom worked at the school, so she's off in the summer, and there would be, you know, one mom parenting 20 kids at any given moment. And we literally would spend the entire day there. And then it was kind of nice. You know, the dads on the weekends would come out and play golf together. They'd stop by on the turn and, you know, say hi, have lunch, and then go back out and play some more. And, you know, if anybody needed to get thrown in the pool, my dad was definitely going to do that as a surprise attack.
Your dad was a huge man.
Yeah, a very large man. He was the most feared man at that country club.
Oh, yeah.
But anyway, I was, I don't know, 13, 14, somewhere around there. And somehow I end up in this kitchen. And I don't know if my dad and I had some level of an argument or something, and it was like a punishment or maybe not. I really don't even recall, but I end up washing dishes there. And like the first day, and I'd never been in a commercial kitchen, you know, and like, it's very, very different than a home, you know. And this kitchen was probably like 2,000 square feet, you know, which is a massive, and it's all industrial and everything stainless steel, and you can spray a hose in the entire kitchen any direction you want.
Yeah.
It all goes to a drain, you know. So, you know, being a young boy, and you've got all that energy, and I'm there in the morning, and it was just me and the chef at the time, and I see this guy, and he's wearing, you know, like a Grateful Dead tie-dye. He's smoking cigarettes while he's flipping French toast and making scrambled eggs and all that. And, you know, when you're 15, 14, whatever, you know, you're kind of like, dude, there's beer here. There's hot girls serving. We're at this country club. And, you know, it's kind of like, you know, you felt like you're the man.
Yeah.
Even though you're washing dishes, you know?
Yeah.
And so I remember asking this guy, I was like, you know, hey, do you think, you know, do you think maybe I can come back and do this again? Yeah, 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 that'd be awesome. You know, you come back, you work every Saturday or whatever. So I was doing that for a while. And then I literally did not believe that. I thought this guy might have just been doing this for fun. I didn't know there was compensation involved. Because I'm watching, I'm going, you know, this is super fun. Like, I love cooking. And like, and so I asked him, I was like, do you get paid? And I was serious as a heart attack. And he was like, yeah, I get paid. I get paid reasonably well, you know. And he had this little, you know, hot rod sports car, convertible, whatever. And I was like, oh my God, like, this is my calling. This is my thing, you know.
Found it.
And so I ended up working there until I was somewhat on and off, but for probably 6-7 years, something like that. And I think I left there when I was 21, maybe. And but I just really, you know, like, I don't know. I like doing stuff with my hands.
Mm-hmm.
The beauty of cooking that is very rare. You know, in any industry is that you're producing something with your hands.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and this could be from the time you order it till you get it, could be 20 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And then I get to see your face. I get instant gratification and you get instant gratification. And, you know, if you don't like me, but you let me cook for you and I feed you, you're going to like me by the end of it.
Yeah.
And the same for, you know, witnessing people, you know, come in, couples that are in an argument, you know, and I see that at the restaurant, people coming in and I can see on their face that they've had a bad day.
Mm-hmm.
And oftentimes they'll walk up and I don't even know who these people are. And I'll go over and give them a hug and I'll tell them it's going to be okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I know.
Yeah.
I know what we do. And I know this dude's probably a little hangry.
Yeah.
He had a rough day and he's got all these things in his brain. And my job is to remove all those things from your brain because the food and everything is going to be such an awesome experience here and so unique that you're not going to even remember what happened 4 hours ago.
Yeah.
And I think that stimulates, you know, when you've got great food, particularly great wine as well, you know, it stimulates those conversations where you can have siblings that don't get along, neighbors that, you know, don't see eye to eye, whatever it may be. If you can put people at a table, there's a level of respect that everyone has for each other.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a bit of a professionalism to dining with someone, you know, and I think that's like, I would love to see, as an example, you and Vladimir Putin sit down at the table,
mm-hmm.
and let me cook for you guys.
Mm-hmm.
And I would imagine by the end of that, there's going to be some level of respect on both sides of the game.
Mm-hmm.
And really, you know, there's not going to be any table flipping. And granted, maybe I used a bad example and your background, you know, maybe one of you might end up dead. Okay.
Depends on what you put in the tea or the coffee. You
know? I'll be doing the serving and now I will acquire the ingredients. But, you know, you just in that environment, you really don't see that. And I think that is such a blessing for me to be a part of that and to get to witness that for my entire life, you know, for 20, 25 years.
Yeah.
I've been doing this. And that is just so enriching and it's empowering,
mm-hmm.
to see, you know, people go from unhappy to happy,
mm-hmm.
that fast, you know, and particularly when you, down the road, when you hear these conversations of people saying, you know, my husband and I met at your restaurant.
Yeah.
We had our first date at your restaurant.
Yeah.
So forth. And to me that, you know, I'm the type of person, I know you are as well. I need a purpose.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I need something to do. I can't just go to work and, you know, there are most restaurants, you go in and you're frying chicken wings all day. You're flipping, yeah. burgers all day. There's no integrity involved in it. There's no relationships. There's no, you know, none of those things really. And so it's really been a blessing to be a part of all that and you know, very lucky.
Yeah.
Hey, everybody. I hope you're enjoying this version of the Next Level Podcast. It's John Sanchez with the Team Performance Institute. Please check us out online at teamperformanceinstitute.com, where you'll find everything from executive coaching to full-scale leadership development programs. And now, back to the next level.
Yeah. I'm going to push back on the word lucky, right? Luck is, my good friend Jack Carr says, like, luck is the residue. Right, of hard work and preparation, a lot of hard work. For you, I think a lot of it was not just preparation, but passion. Like you knew your goal in this direction. You're going to hit on that. You weren't going to back down, and you're willing to put the work in. One of the hardest workers I know. The experience. So what you're talking about is the experience. The experience is, and from the consumer side, I felt that. I've sat in a restaurant. I've also watch people roll in and out of your restaurant, you know, like that. I've seen that experience where they come in and, you know, unfortunately most people do hit a restaurant. Well, not unfortunately, but just normally they're hungry. Mm-hmm. So, you know, everything's down. Their electrolytes are down. Their blood sugar is down. They're getting them to a state of just equilibrium is a bit of a challenge because you have to go through the whole dance of getting people seated and all that. But then I see them float out hours later. And I've had that experience myself many times. I call it the time warp. The Wildflower Cafe is like a time warp. You get in there, you're like, gosh, then you leave. You're like, I just feel 100 times better than when I drove in here. And I didn't, I didn't really come in a bad place. Normally I'm coming in like, this is going to be great.
Always.
Yeah, it's going to be a great time. But let's get deeper into the experience is there, but I want to get deeper into the how and the why, the passion around your food. Tell me a little bit about the importance of sourcing your ingredients, where those ingredients come from. I'd love for you to talk a little bit about some of the connections you have to the food, if you could go there.
Yeah, this is like a thought process that has developed, over the last 25 years. One of the things I love about cooking, I love about wine, is that I'm constantly learning new things.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I started at the country club, and we had a grocery store a half a mile down the street. And at the time, this is kind of out in the country, not very populated. The grocery store had just been built when I was in college, but it was probably a 15, 20 minute drive from my home or from there to go to a grocery store. And we ran out of tomatoes. We're buying everything from food distribution channel, Sysco or whatever. And we ran out of tomatoes and the chef says, I need you to go to Kroger and get some tomatoes. And as I was driving to Kroger, I passed a farm stand, which was literally the adjacent property to the golf course that had tomatoes on it. Right. So I stopped and bought those tomatoes and I brought them back and I was like, these look like really good. These look way better than what we use, and this is like July in Cincinnati, and
prime time.
No one really even knew if that was legal, for me to buy these tomatoes. Huh. So I started looking at that. I'm like, well, it's definitely legal. It's considered non-potentially hazardous food. But even then, people can buy from farms and so forth. So anyway, I started thinking about that more. My dad was a chiropractor and he focused a lot on health and nutrition.
Yeah.
And, so we grew up, I remember him telling patients, I want you to eat more spinach because it has magnesium or yada yada. And I don't want you to go to the grocery store and buy it. I want you to grow it.
Mm.
Get a pack of seeds, put it in your backyard and grow it, because that's what I'm actually talking about, is that one. That's the nutrient dense stuff. So nutrient density has been in my life since I was born.
Yeah.
And I read this book, in middle school. It was called Empty Harvest.
Hmm.
And it in really
middle school.
Yeah. Well, it's not a big book. It wasn't complicated.
Yeah. But on your own, you decided you're just going to read Empty Harvest.
Well, I am not a fiction reader.
Yeah.
I want to learn. If I'm going to spend a half an hour or an hour doing something, I want to learn while I'm doing it. And so this book, Empty Harvest, a lot of it is about Weston A. Price, which is, I think it's a website, Weston A. Price, that you can go to today. And I think it's called something Food Traditions or something like that. But this guy basically did this. He was Weston Price was a dentist.
Mm-hmm.
And he did this long-term research study of basically health all over the world. And he was using indigenous populations, whether that be Ireland or the Maori Indians in New Zealand, and he traveled all over the world and he saw all these really healthy people, kind of like the blue zone situation that we talked about with longevity.
Yeah.
And what he realized was, we've got all these people that are mega healthy and they eat indigenous diets. There's the availability of processed food, the availability of grocery stores and whatnot. And he found, as an example, that consuming sugar, the sugar in contact with your teeth. Now, this is a dentist too.
Mm-hmm.
Sugar in contact with your teeth doesn't cause tooth decay. Sugar getting absorbed into your bloodstream in your mouth and tweaking your blood and spiking your blood sugar causes tooth decay. But the contact, which makes sense because, teeth are really hard.
Mm-hmm.
And so he discovered that and he was like, we've totally got this dentistry thing wrong about consumption. And at the end of the day, you shouldn't eat sugar. So I read that, right? And it was about this Empty Harvest is about this It's written by a bunch of doctors, probably four doctors, I guess, or maybe they're patients. And it talks about soil compositions and that, you know, the concept of ashes to ashes, dust to dust, and all the biblical stuff and whatever about everything in your body is literally found in the soil. And that blew my mind because I thought that was just some some philosophical, you know, belief, some religious belief. I didn't realize that actually every single thing in your body is in our soil. And then I made the connection of, okay, well, so if we have calcium in soil and then we grow a tomato and then that tomato, and then we eat that tomato, that's actually how we get calcium. And that's how we get magnesium, but it's not, everything's neither created nor destroyed. Right.
Right.
And so once I made that connection and I realized, oh, when you look at two tomatoes, a store-bought tomato that's white in the middle and hard as a rock, and then, you know, a beautiful one right off the vine, and you can smell the aromas.
Yeah.
When you slice it and the juiciness and all that.
Totally changed. Yeah. Totally tell the difference.
And then I made the connection. That's nutrient density. You're witnessing nutrient density. Mm-hmm. You're seeing nutrient density. You're smelling nutrient density. And then eating that. Why does the fresh tomato off the vine taste better than one at the store? Because it has more calcium, magnesium, iron, blah, 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 blah. Mm-hmm. So then I thought, okay, well, if I want to open a restaurant, it would seem to make my job easier if I bought those products. Mm-hmm. That evolved into a spiritual thing for me, that this is what I'm supposed to do, is that I'm supposed to facilitate a return to agriculture. That's my calling, is that's who I am, is to take mass populations. You know, and at one point we were seating 30,000 people a year at my restaurant, and to feed these people. And I don't want to be a preacher. You know, when you come in to eat, you don't want to hear me come out and say, "You're a little chunky. Have you thought about your diet? Maybe some exercise, cut back on the beer."
Right.
You know, so I don't want to go that far with it, but at the same time,
true, by the way. Thank you.
Well, not you, most people, but, you know, I don't want to be a preacher, but I can gently nudge people in that right direction because I'm giving them really, flavorful food.
Yeah.
And when they ask, why is that flavorful? Then that's my opportunity to say, well, because I just picked that tomato an hour ago.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so, you know, we had a greenhouse at the cafe. We were growing a lot of stuff out there. I still have cherry trees, mulberry trees. And then my wife and I ended up buying a farm to further facilitate that. But, you know, that becomes a very empowering thing. And then you feel in tune with nature. You feel, you know, if you want to call it God or whatever your terminology may be, you feel in tune with that. And once you're in tune with that, you really start hitting your stride. And I think, you know, I generally don't believe in randomness. That, you know, I believe that there's a path and a purpose, and there's a calling for everyone. And a lot of people don't embrace that. And I embrace that more and more every day.
Yeah.
And when you find that calling and you find what you're supposed to do, and particularly when it's something that's beneficial for mankind.
Yeah.
That you're making your community better, and you're a good steward of the opportunities that you've been given and the land that you've been given, like you're at your farm and my farm. You know, when you're a good steward of that, when you're a good parent, all of those things build, you know, this amazing empowerment.
Yeah.
You know, that, and you see these people that are cheating on their wives, you know, scamming people at work, and they're so unhappy. And you can see that in them, you know, where you see people like you and your wife and your family, and you see this beautiful, beautiful, that's what we're supposed to be doing right here, you know, and that's so empowering. I love even talking about it.
Yeah. It's kind of addictive when you feel like not only is it your passion, but it also it's helpful to others, right? Mm-hmm. It's like altruistically, like these are the gifts that I've been given. And now I get to translate those gifts into something that's going to be beneficial. You have the benefit of making, you're generally making people healthier. I've experienced, like you said, that nutrient density feel, like, and I said, like from the first bite, we were like, whoa, this is amazing. And all I could think of from then on, whether it be, I don't know, 11 years ago, is like when I really want to do right by people, I take them to your restaurant, or I have you come and I've been lucky enough to have you do this to cater, not really cater, come to the house and like just do an event at our house. So I did my 50th birthday party. You sat 60 people and made everybody feel like the king of the feast. It was amazing. So I always say, like, when you really want to, if I could gather all the people that are the most important to me, put them around a table, have Todd Hudson cook, that's going to be an incredible experience.
You know, and the other part of it too is that, and this is something I was thinking about when I opened my restaurant, was when you go to a fast food place and you grab the little sack of food through your window and then you eat it and then you're tired.
Yeah.
And you know, you don't feel very productive, and amongst other things, right?
Yeah.
And then we learn about type 2 diabetes and certain cancers and fatty liver and all these health benefits, lack of health benefits that come from that. When you eat nutrient dense foods, it's the opposite. You know, and really recognizing that your body is calling when it pops into your head, I'm hungry. I need a pick me up. I need something, you know, to make me happy. And then you drive to Wildflower and then you eat and then you walk out.
You feel good.
You are happy. That the experience is really fun. And it's a lot of cool people there and really awesome, awesome vibe. But the other half is you actually consumed a bunch of nutrients that your body was calling for.
Yeah.
Yep. You know, and that's a real blessing as well, you know, to be able to witness that.
Yeah. Your body like literally is ready to absorb all those things. And unfortunately, and I stay tuned for podcast number 2. I've already thought about it while we're sitting here talking. I'm like, I'd love to tie in human performance, you know, to what you're consuming. My background is, you know, athleticism was no longer really is, but like, you know, I tie in human performance to like what you're putting into your body and how important that is. And then, and little just preview to podcast number 2, we haven't even shot it yet, but I'm already thinking about like, let's get into, you know, the commercialization of food and the soil and what's been put into our soil here, you know, as mass producing these ingredients, then they're pumping them out in the grocery store compared to what's available, what we can really get. And we're lucky. I mean, we live here in Cincinnati, Ohio. When I drive home, I can drive by a farm, see a farm stand, pick up a tomato. I mean, that's like one of my favorite
multiple options,
probably favorite, you know, things in the world.
That's one of the things that's made the restaurant, you know, a lot of people ask like, how do you do this? Or, you know, yada, yada. Well, a fair piece of that is our geography.
Yeah.
That, you know, if you're in downtown Cincinnati or if you're in any large city, you know, Chicago,
yeah,
New York,
yeah,
you know, that's quite a drive for a farmer to come into Manhattan and drop all food to you.
Yeah.
That's a big deal. That's probably going to consume most of their day.
Right.
Doing that, where we have the luxury of, you know, when I opened the restaurant, 1 mile from the cafe was Butch Shalpacker's farm. And I was buying eggs from that guy, who is now my neighbor 2 doors down, by the way.
Yeah.
And I would drive down there and I was buying eggs from him. And one day I was like, hey, you know, I need some eggs. I called him or something. And he said, go in the coop and get them.
The best.
Right? So I went in the coop and I'm playing with these chickens and whatnot. And I was like, this is the coolest.
This is
like,
the best, right?
And the eggs are still warm. And I came back and, you know, made bread pudding or, you know, some omelets out of it or whatever. And you know, I thought that was really cool, you know, and it took me 15 minutes to do that.
So let me just encourage everybody listening there. There's so, you know, when we think about eggs, I'm lucky enough to get eggs from Nathan Sams, right? Who,
rock star.
Yeah, he's a rock star. Absolute rock star. Future podcast guest, Nathan Sams. Who gets him from his chickens and brings them to our church. Like, amazing. But those who do, I lived in Chicago, right? There are, and I'm going to encourage everybody, if you haven't had a farm fresh egg, go to a farmer's market. Find a farmer's market. Go to a farmer's market and buy some produce. Simple as that. If you haven't done that yet, give that a shot.
And food for thought with that as an example. In 1940, this is easy to remember because it's 40s. In 1940, we spent 40% of our income on food. And I'm going to say 7 or 8% of our income on insurance and healthcare.
Yeah.
Today we spend 40% of our income on insurance and healthcare and about 7 or 8% on food.
Yeah.
And those numbers, if you watch those track, they're in direct correlation for the last 80 years.
Yeah.
You know, so that's, I think when people realize your body calling for nutrient density, supporting a local farm, there's so many benefits of doing all this.
Yeah.
And if your eggs at the store are $2 and the farmer's charging $5 or $4, well, that's quite all right, to be honest, because people don't realize that it's the food that's making you sick.
Yeah.
And ignorance is bliss. And most people don't want to know about that kind of stuff. I've been hip to that for quite some time. And it is really, really a sad state of affairs. Mm-hmm. And that is the cause. You know, a couple of years ago, I think it was right after COVID, the CDC came out and said, you're more likely to die of the food that you consume than smoking tobacco.
Whoa. Well, I mean, I can see that in today's, like you said, kind of fast food, grab a bag through the drive-through type eating. I mean, that is really, really, really bad for you. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't think we realize how bad that is for you. We've made it so easy, right? We've made it easy to think about if you go through a fast food drive-through, grab a bag of food, and they have all these commercials that's basically like $6-7 to get like one of those meals. What's the real cost, right? The real cost is like, holy cow, like you're going to have all kinds of healthcare issues.
Not even including subsidies that you're paying to the federal government that they're kicking back to supply that high fructose corn syrup that's in your Coca-Cola, which is a significant amount of money that we spend subsidizing very few farmers as a percentage of the dollars that goes out the door from the government. It's a small amount of money. It's a small amount of farmers and a large amount of money.
It's awful. And we're feeding the machine, right? Yeah. By going through that drive-through and getting that food, it ultimately feeds the machine that is the government subsidies. It is all the stuff that we normally complain about, taxes, all that stuff. It's really dangerous. I think about it in two ways too, is like if you know, some people might be able, not afford that extra $3 to get a $10 something from like go to a, like if you could go to a farmer's market, go to the grocery store and get something relatively healthy. One thing. So it's a little, maybe it's like $3 extra in that meal, but way different. The other part is if you get very nutrient dense food, you don't need to buy enough. You don't need to buy, you don't need to buy in the quantities that you do. Like if you eat, and I've really tried to listen to my body, when I was 20 something, listening to my body was like, I treated my body like a rental car. Okay. It was like, if something broke.
What's a liver?
Yeah. What's a liver? You and I have lived very different tasks in terms of like growing through this. But I mean, I just was like, if it's broken, then let's fix this thing like right now because I need a replacement. Let's go. As I've gotten older, 30s, 40s, 50, now I'm 50, is like, and really listening to your body is important. And as you consume food, I mean, honestly, just stopping the fat, you know, when you're really hungry, you just dive in, right? Your body's saying, get at whatever's sitting in front of you. We eat too fast. We know that as a community, as a society, we eat way too fast. And the fast food is built for that, right? It's built for that. But if you listen to your body, if you slow down just a little bit, and you think about like, what that fried food or what that heavy sugar or what that high fructose corn syrup is doing in your body. And you can stop and just, holy cow. Or if you give it up for like 30 days and you go back to it, it's going to feel different.
Mm-hmm.
I had this experience for Lent 1 year high school. I gave up soda. In the Midwest, we call it pop. Give up soda. And as soon as I had soda after Lent, Easter, I was like, this is way too sugary.
Way too much.
Yeah. I cannot drink. This is just like drinking syrup to me. And I've never gone back.
I've always been a beer drinker, John. So when I was in high school, I gave up beer.
Hey, everyone. Thanks for joining us on The Next Level. We hope that you found a couple of tips or insights today that you can take into your daily life.
To learn more about our leadership training programs, our executive coaching programs, and the Team Performance Institute, please visit us at teamperformanceinstitute.com or email us at info@teamperformanceinstitute.com. Hope you have an awesome day.